जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गीला कपड़ा ला रहा है। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जना वल्लभा गिरिवारधारी, गोपी जना वल्लभा गिरिवारधारी, यशोदानंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यशोदानंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरा वन चारी, यमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, गोपी जनवल्लभा गिरिवरधारी, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारी, यमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवरधारी, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारी, यमुना तीरावन चारी, यमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी।
जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशत श्री श्रीमद् हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की जय, अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय, श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरा। सो दोज हु आर हियर, आई गेस मे बी ओनली फर्स्ट डे और सेकेंड डे, we may recite some verses that may be new to you, just, I guess, over the course of time, you may become more familiar. Narayanam namaskritya naram cheva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udirayet nashtaprayeshu bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtike. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 4. Oh, it's the beginning of the chapter. Oh, you did yesterday? Someone did. You did second verse? Second, 4, 3 and 4. Did you read the summary or anything, Jagdananda Prabhu? You did. Okay. Evam labdha varo daityo bibradhimamayam vapuhu bhagavati akaro dvesham bhraturvadham anusmaran evam labdhavaro daityo bibradhimamayam vapuhu bhagavati akaro dvesham bhraturvadham anusmaran evam labdhavaro daityo bibradhimamayam vapuhu bhagavati akaro dvesham bhraturvadham anusmaran. Ladies, please. Evam thus labdhavaraha having obtained his desired boon, daityaha Hiranyakashipu bibhrat acquiring hemamayam possessing the luster of gold. Vapuhu, a body. Bhagavati, unto Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Akarot, maintained. Dvesham, envy. Bhratuvadham, the killing of his brother. Anusmaran, always thinking of. Translation and a purport by Srila Prabhupada. I'm going to read translation for text 3, 4, and 5, 6, and 7 because they're combined. Text 3. Then Lord Brahma, who awards infallible benedictions, departed, being worshipped by the best of the demons, Hiranyakashipu, and being praised by great sages and saintly persons. The demon Hiranyakashipu, having thus been blessed by Lord Brahma, and having acquired a lustrous golden body, continued to remember the death of his brother, and therefore be envious of Lord Vishnu. Purport. A demoniac person, in spite of acquiring all the opulences possible to obtain in this universe, continues to be envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Texts 5 through 7. Hiranyakashipu became the conqueror of the entire universe. Indeed, that great demon conquered all the planets in the three worlds, upper, middle, and lower, including the planets of the human beings, the Gandharvas, the Garudas, the great serpents, the Siddhas, the Charanas, the Vidyadharas, the great saints, Yamraj, the Manus, the Yakshas, the Rakshasas, the Pishachas and their masters, and the masters of the Ghosts and Bhutas. He defeated the rulers of all other planets where they were living, where there are living entities, and brought them under his control. Conquering the abodes of all, he seized their power and influence. Purport. The word Garuda in this verse indicates that there are planets of great birds like Garuda. Similarly, the word Uraga indicates that there are planets of enormous serpents. Such a description of the various planets of the universe may challenge modern scientists who think that all planets but this earth are vacant. These scientists claim to have launched excursions to the moon, where they have found no living entities but only big craters full of dust and stone, although in fact the moon is so brilliant that it acts like the sun in illuminating the entire universe. Of course, it is not possible to convince modern scientists of the Vedic information about the universe. Nonetheless, we are not very much impressed by the words of scientists who say that all other planets are vacant and that only the earth is full of living entities. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So this chapter is titled Hiranyakashipu. Well, it is not planned to be immortal. The title is Hiranyakashipu Terrorizes the Universe. So as far as terrorist activity is concerned, this is not new. Somehow the world is being concerned about terrorist activity, which one should be. But just as there is a disciplic succession for spiritual aspirants, there is a indisciplined succession, if you will, of people who are indisciplined in bringing about disorders to the world. It's a tongue-in-cheek statement, but you get the idea. That there are persons from the beginning of creation who have the idea that they are God, and that they have the right and the power, they believe so, to control everyone else. The only difference is that the magnitude of it changes from person to person. For a few people, or some persons, the range of control extends maybe not much beyond their wife or children or family at best. For some, it extends to their village or town, their city in someone else's case. Someone else may control a whole state, a country, few countries, maybe the planet. And in this case, same thing. It's just that he is controlling the entire universe. That is his power. And such control, there are two ways of controlling something or someone mostly. Right? Two ways. One way is by force or power. And the other way is by love. In the first way, or in the first method, the other person's voluntary acceptance of that power or position is not necessary. It's very simple. You agree to what I say and do. If not, I'll kill you. It's a very simple formula. You agree or you die. It looks like two choices. It's only one choice. And this is Hiranyakashipu's method of control. Now, if you'll see in his capacity to control, he is very competent. Very competent. I mean, it's not easy. It's not easy, first of all, to stand on toes, the tip of his toes, with his arms raised for 1,000 celestial years, heavenly years, which we calculated from an earthly calculation is 6,400,000+ years. That's over 1.5 yuga cycles. That's not humanly possible, but he did it. And it's not just standing on the tip of his toes with his arms raised, but he was deeply determined. And his determination was not disturbed by the fact that there were ants crawling on his body. He had withdrawn his breathing to such a degree that it was not clear whether he was dead or alive. And actually, if something is not alive, if you see any National Geographic video or something, as soon as an animal, a carcass, is lying on the ground, of course, after the other animals eat up the flesh, the first thing that swarm that body is ants. And they're crawling everywhere, ants and worms. I know, that's distracting a bit. It's only a window. Ants and worms crawling and eating up the body because it's dead. But you don't see ants and worms crawling up live people as much. If an ant crawls, but Hiranyakashipu was standing so still that there were ants. I think we discussed this last time. This is for the benefit of some of the persons who are new. The ants were crawling up his body. Anyone has that experience of an ant crawling up your body? It tickles you. And not just one ant, but hundreds of ants crawling up and pretty much going into every hole of the body, if you will. And that's quite a tickle. But Hiranyakashipu didn't budge. He didn't move. He didn't say nothing. They're going into his ears, his nostrils, his mouth, everywhere else. He didn't move. Because he was determined, I need to get this benediction that I have to become immortal so that I can kill Vishnu. Yuck. I mean, all the determination directed to like the lowest aspiration. To kill God, to displace God, Vishnu, and become himself the most powerful personality. So great determination, just horribly directed. Yet Lord Brahma gave him the benediction, saying it's very difficult to get. And now that you've received this benediction, and Brahma has left, and Hiranyakashipu says, everything that I need to be the controller of the universe, I have now. And no one can stop me, because I have all these benedictions from Lord Brahma, that I cannot die in the morning or night, indoors or outdoors, on the ground or in the sky, by any being created by Brahma, which includes all the species, nor by any weapon, and neither in the morning nor at night. So he got his, all his bases covered, he thought. And for a person like that, with a very, very deeply contaminated heart, what's the first thing he does? Goes out and conquers. Because all these list of personalities, long list, they're all created by Brahma. So naturally, they cannot defeat him, and he is invincible. So he goes about conquering them and has become very, very powerful. And anyone who didn't accept his authority, he had a very simple solution for them. Kill them. In leading others, leadership of others, I recently learned a simple way, but this is how the secular world looks at it. We may not be as concerned by the particular model, but it can be used for appreciating the great devotees who are amazing leaders, especially, let's say, Srila Prabhupada, our founder Acharya. So in the secular world, they say that leadership needs is based on two dimensions. The one dimension is called competency. How competent a person is in fulfilling their duties as a leader. And the second dimension, do you want to guess what that is? Called character. What their inner makeup looks like. So when you have these two dimensions, you pretty much get what's called a 2x2. You get a box with four places. One is on one end, high in character, a very low in competence. This side of the box is high in character and high in competence. The bottom box is high in competence, very low in character. And this corner naturally then is low competence and low character. Hiranyakashipu fits this high competence, low character box. He is very competent because he's subjugated the entire universe. Very, very low character. Can you think of another example from Bhagavatam? A person who fits that? Very competent, but no character. Fourth canto. Vrikasura. About his competency is not provided as a leader, though. I was just one demon who... In fourth canto, there's the mention of Vena. King Vena was very competent, but very low character. His competence was, he had ruled the entire kingdom with a very, very strict hand. And anyone who did not agree with him didn't have a head anymore. So everyone was afraid, so they followed his rules like anything. But they were afraid. Now, of course, when you see, when you analyze Srila Prabhupada's life, he's not only very competent, but of great character. Or Yudhishthira Maharaj. Amazing personalities as leaders and kings. So Hiranyakashipu, despite his competence, sometimes we pay so much or sometimes we give so much credit or due to one's competence, but not so much to one's character. Or we go so much on the side of character that even if they're not competent, and if you have one without the other, the followers suffer. You can have a very nice-hearted person with a particular responsibility that if they're not able to do, others suffer. So Hiranyakashipu wants to, this whole plan of becoming immortal. Of course, so this is Hiranyakashipu's method. There is another method in the Bhagavad Gita of how to become immortal. In the second chapter, Krishna gives it right in the beginning. There are a few things to live by. The first principle to live by, to live or to become immortal, or to recognize or realize one's immortal nature. The first is to see the distinction between matter and spirit. That the spirit itself, or who we are eternal beings, and the body, which is what we mostly can touch, feel, see, hear, taste, and all that, is temporary. And therefore, the first instruction of Krishna, he doesn't use the word Atma so much. He talks everything in relation to the body. Dehina asmin yatha dehe. He calls the soul as a dehi, that which is embodied. Dehina asmin dehe. That which is embodied, which is residing in this body of Kaumaram Yavanam Jara, moves through phases from boyhood to youth to old age. Tatha Deha Antara, and after death, Deha Antara Prapti, it acquires another body. Dhira Tatra Namuhyati, the one who is sober doesn't get bewildered by such truth or reality. So first order of business is to recognize this distinction between the self and the body. A person who cannot begin to either at least appreciate it, even if theoretically, cannot start their journey on the path of immortality. They are confined by mortality severely. Not only of mortality of the body, but mortality of everything. Their endeavors, their aspirations, their possessions, everything becomes mortal or confined or finite. Right? That's the first teaching. Dehina asmin yatha dehe. Then the second teaching Krishna gives. Okay, the first is you need to understand the distinction between body and spirit. The second lesson, you may not have, this is Krishna speaking. O Arjun, you may not have realized the distinction yet. But now that you've heard about it, that there is a body and then there is a soul, and these two are distinct entities, what to do? You have to learn to tolerate the pushings of this body, the pushing in the direction of a very finite existence. Because these pushings come and go. The pushings are called happiness and distress in primary categories. Happiness we define as anything that the senses come in contact with that the mind says, very good, I like it. And distress is nothing but anything that the senses come in contact with that the mind says, I don't like it. That is distress. And the interesting feature is the same thing that the senses come in contact with, at one point we like and then we don't like. It's the same thing, nothing changed. The mind is just too finicky, as they say. Keeps changing. What we like one time, we don't like another time. What we didn't like earlier, we like now. And that's going to change again. And that change is as definite as the changes in season. Winter and summer, Krishna says, they come and go. You don't like the winter? What to do? What would you do if you don't like the winter? You just wait it out. You wait it out and spring and summer come. Some people don't like the summer. What do? You just wait and the cool weather comes. Yeah, moving to Florida is an option. What'd you say? Exactly. So you can like Florida, because that's what Jordan said. Move to Florida. And in Florida there is something that you don't like. It's too hot. Then you have to find some place that's not too hot, not too cold, settle down in Tennessee, and then there is something else you don't like, country music. So you figure something out. Right? You want your kind of music, it's not available, but it just comes with the cold. There's so many things that there is always something that you don't like, and there is something that you like. So Krishna says, just shut up and tolerate it. Matra sparashastu kaunteya sitoshna sukha dukkhada. Anything that gives happiness and distress is going to come and go, just tolerate. Tam sthitikshasva. Tolerate, we've used this phrase many times, doesn't just mean you grit your teeth and say, one day there will be a good day, one day there will be a good day. What he says, tolerate, means that go back to the previous instruction. The previous instruction says, I am not this body. And somehow, whatever this body will experience will be full of a mixture of happiness and distress. What to do? You can't do anything about it. You can't just, it's not like a t-shirt that you take off and say, I'm going to wear something else. You can't give up the body. Yeah, suicide is an option. But what happens with suicide? It doesn't solve the problem. It actually creates more problems. No, hold on, I'm not done yet. So it creates more problems. So Krishna says, tolerate in the sense that take your attention to something beyond the existence of the body. Take your attention to who you really are. And so for that he says, yam hina vethayante te purusham purushas purushar sabha sukha dukha samandhira so amrtatvaya kalpate. That a person who learns how to balance, or a person who learns equanimity in distress and happiness, such a person is eligible for living a life of immortality. That's like the basic principle. Now every day, it's described that, in a sort of funny way, that there are two persons, two categories of persons who don't have any distress. One is the fully realized persons. They have full self-realization that any circumstance of life doesn't disturb them. Like a sthita pragya taduchyate, Krishna says. There's no disturbance. Everything is going wrong, you ask them and they'll say, what's the distress? No distress. There's a joke about a person, a learned person had visited a town, and he was supposed to give a talk on the existence of God. So as soon as he came to the stage, he asked the crowd, how many of you believe in the existence of God? Nobody raised their hands. So he said, then what's the use of my talking? And he left. So then they had to invite him again. No, no, please come, please come. And so they wanted to hear him. So next time, again, he stood up and he says, how many of you believe in the existence of God? Everyone raised their hands. And he said, then what's the use of my talking? You're already convinced. And so he left. No, 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 we want you to speak. So they called him a third time. And this time the audience figured out, hey, half of us will raise the hands and the other half will not. So he stood up and he said, so how many of you believe in the existence of God? Half the crowd raised their hands. He said, very good. The half that is convinced should convince the other half that's not convinced. You don't need me to speak. And he walked away. Point is, you know, a person who's fully realized, they don't see distress. For them, every situation is, hey, it's okay. Everything's working by the order of Krishna. There's no distress here. Distress is only because my vision is not proper. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta would say, there is no shortage of anything in this world. The only shortage is of God consciousness or Krishna consciousness. Because as soon as one's eyes are empowered by self-realization, you see everything differently. The same circumstances you see very differently. Right? In our life, if we had lost something, we feel so devastated. You know, our girlfriend dumped us, or boyfriend dumped, or something. Oh, it's the end of life. Sing the blues, whatever. But with a little, even with a little bit of self-realization, if the girlfriend dumped us, we say, it's not a bad thing after all, or whatever. Whatever. You see it in a way that makes more sense. Okay, there is something to life here now. Realization changes the perspective, because knowledge is very powerful. And the other end of the spectrum is a complete, completely ignorant person who cannot even discern between what is happiness and distress. As they say, ignorance is bliss. You don't know anything. Like a zombie walking. It's so much in ignorance that there is no distress for them either. Who's the one who struggles? The one who's actually practicing self-realization or Krishna. The sadhaka struggles the most. Because the sadhaka is moving from the ignorant condition to the knowledgeable condition. So we see, man, I should see this differently. I should pray to Krishna. I'm not this body. Whatever works for us, but that's the struggle. And we are meant to go from this category of bliss to that category of bliss. This is not really bliss. It's a different category, but still. So the struggle is while moving on that path. So Krishna acknowledges it. Yeah, happiness and distress exist. Just learn to tolerate them. Tolerate in a way that you see beyond it. Such a person who has his vision set or her vision set beyond the immediate disturbances or the exhilarations, such a person is a fit candidate for liberation. And now all that I've spoken, Hiranyakashipu is like the antithesis for it. He's not looking beyond the situation. His whole mind is absorbed with dvesha. Bhagavati dvesha. His envy towards Krishna has now become stronger and stronger and stronger. Because he's constantly remembering. Bhratuh vadham anusmaram. He's constantly remembering. My brother was killed by Vishnu. I need to take revenge. He's thinking on a very bodily platform. This is my brother.
So what does it lead to? Distress, not only for himself, but for others. In fact, for everyone in the universe. And he's on a mission. And the verses Prabhupada says in the another purport, the next purport, that he has conquered all these persons in the 14 planetary systems. So, for those of you who are, may not be so familiar, according to the Vedic worldview, our universe has 14 levels of existences. And these levels are according to one's consciousness. Just as in a building, you have different tiers of people living according to their qualification. The fellow who has the most money gets the penthouse. And the fellow who has the least money gets the garden apartment, right? It's called a garden apartment because it's like a misnomer. You think, garden apartment? Yeah, you are in the garden or under the garden, for what I understand. Garden apartment means basement, with a little window that all that you see is the garden. You see the roots of the plants. Others see the flowers, you see the roots. That's called garden apartment. Depends on qualification. You got more dough, the higher you go. Yeah? You say, hey, what's your address? My address is, whatever, 300 North State Street. It's the Con on the Cob building. I used to live in that building. So for me that was like a major show off to my friends. What's your address? 300 North State Street. And my apartment was only four units or four levels above the parking lot. So actually if you say it was nothing great. But the guys living on the 50th floor, they had like the best view of things. But to show off 300 North State, it's actually right near the parking lot. So it depends on one's qualification. So the universe is graded according to qualification of consciousness. So Lord Brahma has the penthouse, way up there. And we are, the human beings are right in the middle of the universe, called the Bhuloka. So there are these names, but you don't have to remember, but there are seven layers above. Bhu, Bhuvar, Svar, Mahar, Jana, Tapa, and Satya Loka. And there are these grades below. Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Talatala, Rasatala, there's one more in Patala. And this depends on the consciousness. So how it works is, those who are more elevated on the path of self-realization live on higher realms of the universe, and those who are very much focused on living a very highly sense gratification lifestyle live on the lower levels. They get the garden apartment. So this is the Vedic worldview. And it's not just that everyone looks like human. Then the other view is, what's that, Area 51? Area 51, where the US government apparently has hidden some evidences about extraterrestrial beings. And generally we think of them as, you know, some globuled eyes and some tentacles showing up and flying funny UFOs. Big heads, whatever, and iron tentacles that can reach up there, and advanced computer systems. That's not the Vedic worldview. Vedic worldview is there are people or living beings on all realms of the universe. Because even if one cannot prove it or disprove it, just the little notion that in such a gigantic universe that is 4 billion miles wide, you take one Earth planet with what, 7 billion human beings as the only place where there is life is a little preposterous and arrogant, isn't it? I'm the only living being. After the world is dark and inhabitable. Doesn't make sense. Doesn't make any sense. However, what makes sense in the absence of any other evidence, if you will, is that there are beings that live on these realms who have bodies suited for the atmosphere of those places. And Prabhupada would use a simple analogy. Of course, I'm not trying to give you a scientific methodology here. But what Prabhupada would say is, when you go to the ocean, you see there are many living beings in water. The shark, the fish, whatever, the jellyfish, etc. Their body structure, however it's made, is very different from the human beings living on land. The fish is born in water, it dies in water, and lives the entire life in water, but its skin or whatever never becomes what we call waterlogged. If we go and stand in water, our hands are in water for a very long time, our skin becomes waterlogged. You see all the folds and the skin becoming, because we are not suited for living in water. So to think that on other realms, when even in this, I guess on this earthly realm, each body is different according to their living condition. The birds have a different body. I was told recently, I never knew this, that a duck never gets wet. It's always in water, it never gets wet. It can dunk its head in water and come out, it never gets wet. You put a dog or a human being in water, it come out wet. They never get wet because they're suited for, I guess, paddling in water and flying in air. So even in this realm, the bodies are different according to the living conditions or suited for the living conditions. So in upper realms or lower realms, there are bodies that are suited for that kind of environment. So that's the... Now, I didn't get into maybe tomorrow Jai Jagannath, you're speaking. No, Radharaman Prabhu is speaking. Okay. At some point in time. I didn't get into the discussion of the difference between the scientific mechanistic worldview and the Vedic worldview. They operate on two very different, systems, if you will. So I didn't get into that. One is called the descending system, which is the Vedic view of things, and the other is called the ascending system, which is the method by which you take information from this world and try to extrapolate your conclusions about what the world looks like. I'll leave you with this for today, and we can have discussions at breakfast or later. But it's simple like this. The difference in these two systems, Prabhupada would give us, is let's say I would like to know who my father is. That's the scientific question that I need to find an answer for. So the modern mechanistic research design based system is that I create a research design. Okay? The research design will say any man who is at least 17 years older than I is a potential for being my father. Unless my father was really naughty when he was young and, you know, things happened earlier. But let's say 17. So I draw the first paradigm, right? 17 years or older. I know. So that's first. And then I create my research. Must be, assuming Indian descent, but we don't know. So any male who's 17 years older than I is a potential for him to be my father. Okay. Next step, then I go, now I have to find all these males. So what are some constraints? time is a constraint, that by the time I reach all the males on this planet, he may have, as they say in America, kicked the bucket, whatever, left the planet in a nice way. Left. So I may not be, I don't have the time to reach. Even if I have the time, I definitely don't have the money to find all these people, to travel and get these men. Right? Even if I get them, let's say I find that man, then I have to do a DNA testing. And we know that DNA matching has some errors in it, right? It's not 100% conclusive. It has some what's called margin of error. So while I don't have unlimited time, I don't have unlimited money, I don't have the right tools necessarily, and I have to find out who my father is. But can I? Theoretically speaking, is it possible? Yeah, it is possible. Theoretically speaking. And Prabhupada says this is the scientific method. Theoretically, it's possible. The Vedic method is simpler. He said, ask the mother. Mother will know. There's only a few rare cases where the mother also did not know. In the case of Satyakama, the mother said, hey, I don't know. And if it happens in any of our cases, then we're just hugely unfortunate. But in most cases, the mother knows. So Prabhupada says, you save time, you save money, you get the right answer. This is called the descending system. Of course, we're not just talking something simplistic as who's my father, and we're talking about creation. We talked about where do things come from, how do things operate, etc. Still, the system itself is valid. We need persons with realization to allow us. So, I didn't get into the details of the two systems of knowledge in a university environment. You know, I think I spoke for almost 3 weeks on it. But you get the idea. There's the two different systems. So one system says, I have to rely on my abilities and create objective instruments which themselves are limited because I'm creating them to measure things or phenomena beyond my capacity. So there are four reasons why the ascending system is not too valid. Because we all have senses that are limited. Right? Anyone has unlimited senses? No. And because they're limited, we make mistakes. The senses can come under illusion, and we have the tendency to cheat. We see something, we hear something, but we conclude something else, intentionally or unintentionally. And if I create any instrument for measurement, I'm creating on the basis of these limitations. So my instrument is only as good as my ability. And so it's a little audacious to say that I can tell or I can give information about this world when it is far beyond my capacity. That's those are the limitations within a scientific approach to things. Now, have we made great progress? Yeah, sure. We have made great progress only on the level of day-to-day living per se, in terms of technology that facilitates day-to-day living. One would even argue that's really not advancement, but we should give some credit, so there is something. But there is no advancement on the path of self-realization from a scientific methodology. People are not becoming more advanced spiritually because now we are technologically advanced. In fact, all evidence leads the other direction. So those are some thoughts. Any comments? Michael was... Oh, okay. From Mike to Mikey. See, technologically advanced. Go ahead.
So, according to the planetary systems, do the high higher and lower planetary systems have more to do with God consciousness?
Don't they go to they're inversely proportional to each other? So higher realms also have great sense gratification, and the lower realms have even greater sense gratification. But the difference is, the higher the realm, the pious, the more the people are pious, and heading in the direction of something that says, hey, there's more to life than this. And in the lower realms, this is life. Jai Baldev. Not just God consciousness, it's Mikey, it's varying levels of advanced consciousness. Hare Krishna. I can't hear you. Is it turned on? It makes you feel better to hold it even if it's not working?
Yeah,
okay.
My question to you is that, of course, yeah, I mean, it's correct to say that, you know, of course, character is primary, what wants to happen to them, and that's really is some part of the ability. So, my question is related to, like, the past time of, I built with Mongol type was supposed to walk sand, sits on the Vyasa sign, then gives his background how he lusts after the process of living and control the senses. Then he tells us, you know,
people don't care about past so much. People care about where they are and where they're going. What's that phrase Jitendra Prabhu sometimes says? Every saint has a past and every sinner has a future, something like that. What people are interested in is transformation. Because if only a completely flawless person has to give a class, then we might as well not be able to hear anything. The point is not what is Bilwa Mangal Thakur is a personality who, with all the facilities that he had, he was very knowledgeable, but he severely lusted after a prostitute. And later, you know, he was awakened to, oh, maybe I should spend my life realizing God, went after, in search of God, I guess, and still lusted after another woman to such a degree that he decided to pluck his eyes out so that he cannot see anything, of course. But still, and then he, I guess, transformed into an awesome saint who wrote amazing writings on Krishna. The point we speak about him is because it's transforming. He transformed into... Otherwise, if Hiranyakashipu came and sat here and said, I'll give you a class because I did great austerity, what's our interest? I'll teach you how we can kill Vishnu. What's our interest? No interest. We don't care. We don't care if he's Hiranyakashipu. So it's not the past necessarily. It's what's transforming. Because bhakti has the transforming capacity. Whether it is small, medium, large in terms of transformation, who are we to decide? But anything transforming is powerful. And that's what we are interested in hearing. The reason we hear someone speak is because we want to be convinced, or we are interested in being convinced of the power and potency Krishna has in controlling us through love. That's the other method of control, is love. To such a degree that we'll voluntarily, Lord Srila Prabhupada said, I'm an old man, I'm paraphrasing, I'm an old man, all of you young boys and girls are going out and distributing books and doing Harinam and constructing temples, and I don't pay you any salary. All of you are working for free. In fact, you're bringing all your money and giving it to me. It's not that I'm looking for the money. It's the loving exchange between the two of us, or all of us. Is Srila Prabhupada would say, I'm giving you transcendental knowledge. I'm giving you a relationship with Krishna, or reminding you of that relationship which you already have but forgotten. And that happiness, that gratitude is what is making you do this. It's love. Very, very powerful. And when any person speaks of it, it's touching. Oh, wow. Okay, anything else? Okay, thank you for your attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Bhagavatam ki jai.